Hello, and welcome to Star Wars Sleepover, a laid-back exploration of the captivating and sometimes ridiculous galaxy far, far away. I'm Europa Tokani, and as always, I'm here with my co-host.
I'm Loya Rowan. This show, following up on our discussion of Queen Shadow, we'll be discussing Padme's relationship with Anakin and how she's portrayed in the prequel trilogy. Let's do this.
Well, it's time once again for our first segment, Cantina Corner. Every episode, Loya and I are each choosing a Star Wars themed cocktail to enjoy during our sleepover. And I think we both might need a cocktail this time.
More agreed. So than usual.
Yeah. So, this week, I chose Tanqueray. Tanqueray, according to Wikipedia, was a teal-colored, sparkling Alderaanian wine. It was rare and sought after by connoisseurs, even more so after Alderaan was destroyed by the Galactic Empire. There are also some fun facts about Tanqueray on Wikipedia, including that Tobias Beckett, who appears in Solo, was kidnapped by the queen of some remote planet who wanted to make him her husband. Beckett was rescued by his partner in crime, Val, RIP, and the two celebrated by drinking a whole bottle of rare Tanqueray wine that Beckett had lifted from the queen. Also, at dinner parties where sensitive information was being discussed, my girl Queen Brea Organa of Alderaan would sometimes have real Tanqueray served only to specific guests, while the rest were served the less alcoholic duplicate. The two were similar enough in color that only a few could tell the difference. Hopefully I have the real and legitimate Tanqueray right now. The reason that I chose it was because it was also sold at Ogus Cantina on Batuu. It is also sold in real life at Ogus if you go to Galaxy's Edge, although I have not tried it yet. And apparently a bartender offered the drink to Padme when she traveled to Batuu during the Clone Wars. And that information comes from Thrawn Alliances, which I have not read. However, I listened to a podcast called Podcast The Ride, which is about theme parks and does a lot of episodes on Disney. And one of the hosts, before Galaxy's Edge opened, found out that this wine was being offered and was just very, very into getting Padme's special drink. So he did get to have it. I don't remember what his assessment of it was, but I know it was a topic of much discussion on that podcast. So I thought I would try it out because apparently it was something that was enjoyed by Padme.
Aww.
So in honor of her, and obviously I had to make it myself. So although I just said I hope I have the real Tanqueray, it's obviously not. I think at Galaxy's Edge it is Chardonnay that probably just has blue food coloring in it. I didn't have Chardonnay. I have some sort of local white wine that I think is just like a white wine blend. I had a little bit of it earlier and it was actually pretty good.
Good.
So to create my Tanqueray, I mixed the white wine with a little bit of blue curacao, which my husband lovingly bought for me so that I could make the Dagobah Slug Slinger a few weeks ago. So I'm very curious to see what this tastes like. It's white wine and blue curacao. So I'm going to go ahead and try it. Not bad. Definitely tastes like blue curacao. I guess it is also supposed to be sparkling, which it's not. I overlooked that aspect of it. So I put it in a champagne flute because I'm assuming that's how it would be served, but it is not, in fact, sparkling.
So, they have at Galaxy's Edge, would they have like sparkling white wine? Like, how would they mix those?
I don't think it's like sparkling at Galaxy's Edge.
Oh.
Now that you say that.
Interesting. So I was like, would you just, like, carbonate Chardonnay, which sounds
that sounds
awful. Well, at least it's drinkable, and you're using the blue curacao again, which is great.
I have like a handle of blue curacao, so I'll probably be making a lot of drinks that involve blue curacao.
Margaritas.
All right, well, not bad. I'll probably drink this pretty quickly and then just pour myself another glass of regular wine. What's your drink this week?
So I made a Kylo Rye, which has no bearing on today's episode. It's available at liquor.com, and it is originally created by the bartenders at Bend Distillery in Bend, Oregon. So they decided to like make this because it pays tribute to the fiery temperament of Kylo Ren and his take-no-prisoner style of savoring, with this ample use of spicy rye and puckery lime juice. So the reason I picked it was because I actually have, for once, all the ingredients. And so it involves rye whiskey, fresh lime juice, and club soda. Very simple. However, I did learn today that if you let limes desiccate a little bit, it's really hard to get the pulp away from the peel. So my lime twist looks pretty messed up. I also found out that I have a lot of paper cuts on my hand trying to cut that lime. So a little bit of pain. So hopefully it's worth it. Let's give it a shot. Oh, God, that's good. Yeah, there we go. I hit the middle ground. Not too strong, not too weak. Oh, so good. Yeah, best drink so far.
Yours is definitely better than mine. I have drunk probably like a third of it at this point, though, so it'll probably be done soon.
And it'll taste even better as you go along.
Yeah, true.
Easing the pain of this episode.
Okay, so now that we have both gotten started on our drinks, we will get into our topic for the day. Cheers.
Cheers.
Following our reading of Queen Shadow by E.K. Johnston, Loya and I went back and rewatched the prequel trilogy. I had last watched it probably in November of this past year because I did a rewatch of all 8 of the movies prior to The Rise of Skywalker being released. And at that point, I probably hadn't watched any of the prequel movies. I don't know, possibly in 10 years. I honestly had not seen the prequel trilogy all that many times. I think I might be up to like 4 times for each movie at this point. So I am wondering, Loya, what your overall thoughts were on rewatching the prequel trilogy and if there were any changes to your perspective or your opinion of them this time around.
So like you, I did rewatch them fairly recently in anticipation of Rise of Skywalker. My husband and I made them into a drinking game, which was definitely beneficial. Rewatching them again so recently, major kudos again to E.K. Johnston. Like, she made the prequels so much better than they were. And so watching them again, it was bad. It was worse. It was pretty much like as we discussed at the last episode, like knowing that Padme is intelligent, she has a support system, there are these handmaidens who are competent and care about her, watching her proceed through the prequels was devastating. So my opinion completely reverted back to being a prequel hater. After a very brief, shiny glimpse of like, oh, maybe they're not as bad. No, they're bad. So that's where I'm at.
So I wouldn't say that my opinion of the movies overall changed. Definitely my relationship to the movies as it pertains to Padme did. But in terms of just watching the movies, I think I'm exactly where I was prior to this rewatch, which is that Phantom Menace has grown on me a little bit. It's watchable. It's enjoyable, even in some parts. It's definitely not even close to being my favorite, but I have enjoyed it more the past two times that I've watched it than I had previously. Attack of the Clones is just still
so
absolutely
bad.
Rough, and it is my least favorite by far. And then, though, like, I think I've grown to actively like Revenge of the Sith. I don't know what my opinion was of it when it first was released. I, again, was just not super into the prequels, so I don't think I ever had a huge amount of affection for it. But especially looking back at it after I hadn't watched it for a while, I think it is a pretty good movie, and I think there are a lot of things about it that are compelling. So just on their own, that's what I would say about the movies. However, after having read Queen's Shadow, it was very frustrating to watch what unfolded with Padme.
And the question I come back to every time with the prequels is literally, I mean, there are some parameters that George Lucas had to work with. Obviously, Anakin and Padme had to get together. But it was, there was a lot of blank slate. And this is what he came up with. This. I don't understand.
I think, really, the whole point of the prequels was to get to Revenge of the Sith and to get to Anakin becoming Darth Vader. And I think when that happens, that is actually satisfying. And I think it's done well, but the lead up to it is just... yeah, I don't know why that was what he chose.
Yeah. And there are so many glimmers of, like, Padme being a strong female character. And then, I mean, consistency is a problem. We'll have to talk about that in other episodes because I have many, many thoughts on Palpatine and Yoda throughout the prequels and even the Jedi Council as a whole. But, like, Padme's treatment throughout the prequels was just, like, so inconsistent, where she'd be, like, the strong, like, she's taking charge. She's, like, we'll go the long way. She's competent. She makes decisions. And then, yet, she still finds herself, like, waiting for her man in certain scenes and just being, like, seemingly blind to, like, or, like, her reactions to Anakin's very troubling comments just don't make sense to me.
Right. I mean, not only is it frustrating because she's been shown in Phantom Menace to be strong, mature, intelligent, wise beyond her years. And then even in the first part of Attack of the Clones, you see that. And then it's like a switch just flips.
Yeah.
And it's like, what happened? This doesn't make any sense. Like, she just completely loses all of her senses when it comes to Anakin. And I don't quite understand why.
No. And there, I mean, it's not like I could have understood if he was hiding. I mean, he was hiding things from her, but there are definitely times where he's straight up honest. I killed them. I killed them all. We'll talk more about that. But, like, her reaction to that is horror. And then, like, the next scene is just like, I love you. Like, that was a hard transition for me. Like, if someone just admitted to me, like, I murdered an entire village. Oh boy. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't then fall in love with him.
The red flags.
Right.
And then you mentioned briefly The Handmaidens, and I know that was one of the things we were looking for, having read Queen's Shadow, is how much of Queen's Shadow was totally E.K. Johnston and how much she was enriching The Handmaidens versus what was apparent on screen. And I think the answer is it was 95% E.K. Johnston.
Yep.
And I think the book definitely did enrich, especially my viewing of The Phantom Menace, where I understood what was going on in the background and behind the scenes and really off screen with The Handmaidens. And then when I did see that one scene where, you know, they were going after the Trade Federation and running around the palace and Theed, I feel like my primary emotion was a pride, where I was just like, oh, like, wow, you guys are so good at what you do. Like, I understand now. Like, good job.
Yeah.
You're doing so well. And then I think after a certain point in Attack of the Clones, they just kind of fade away. And they're Corday, conspicuously absent in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah. And Corday dying at the very beginning of Attack of the Clones, having read
Queen Shadow. Yes, we'll talk about that when we get to that point, because I was just like, this is 1,000 times worse now.
Yeah, I was like, no! And also, what happened to Verse? Like, she's not present.
No.
And, I mean, just because she wasn't, you know, the quartermaster, she was the splicer, as I recall. I mean, there was still plenty of opportunity to, like, have her in the background. And my notes from Revenge of the Sith is just, like, for the where is Sabe? Like, exclamation point, question mark, Like, there's a lot of questions there.
Yeah, because the only handmaiden who's really around, as far as I can remember, even in Attack of the Clones, at least after Corday dies, is Dorme.
Yep.
And then she just Rose goes Byrne. Away.
Yeah.
Which apparently today, as we're recording this, is Rose Byrne's birthday.
Aw, happy birthday, Rose Byrne. I'm
sure she's listening.
She might be. She totally could be.
Maybe she has like a Google alerts for handmaiden.
Just dying to know if that role like lasted beyond her like very brief screen time. Which, I mean, she played it well. Like, I like Dorme. I like Rose Byrne. It was solid. But yeah, not enough. I wanted more handmaidens for sure.
Yeah.
Also, she packs her own clothes.
Like, I know. At the start. It's funny that you mentioned that, because there is another podcast called Newcomers, which is Lauren Lapkus and Nicole Byer, who are comedians, and they had never seen Star Wars prior to like January of this year. And podcast is them watching all the Star Wars movies and discussing them, and like they know absolutely nothing about them. So it's really funny. But one of the things that they brought up that they were so annoyed about was the fact that Padme was packing her own clothes and carrying her own clothes. They're like, she has handmaidens, she has droids. Like, why isn't there a droid that just carries her luggage for her? And they had a guest on. The guest was just like, I don't know. And they were like, this is not acceptable. Why would this be?
I mean, yeah, I had never noticed that until, like, because we had read Queen's Shadow, and I knew the role that, like, her handmaidens played, and, like, Dorme in particular being the wardrobe mistress. I always want to call her the quartermistress for some reason, regardless. Like, what is she doing? Like, her clothes are so multi-purposed and, like, you know, I assume they're heavy. Yeah.
But, yeah. Again, all credit to E.K. Johnston.
Major.
What an amazing job with the material that she had. I just must commend her.
Yes. And one more thing about E.K. Johnson's world and the junior legislative program, which I just feel compelled to mention. Okay, so in Attack of the Clones, Padme's off to, like, hide on Naboo. And Naboo, which has this, like, very robust, strong, efficient democracy, full of young people who are in the junior legislative program, like, who are presumably competent, this whole political structure, and Padme leaves and Jar Jar Binks is in charge? What?
I like get the feeling from their exchanges in the movie that Padme basically told everyone that she wanted Jar Jar to be her successor, which is a choice.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this just kind of reinforces the fact that, like, oh man, that wine sounds so good. I almost said smells.
As we start talking about Jar Jar, I'm just like, gonna pour some more wine.
Yep. Yeah, the fact that, like, she's a strong, competent woman, and then she just makes these, like, very two really bad mistakes.
Yeah, her judgment is very poor.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
But maybe this is like too much expectation for characters to remain consistent, because like as human beings, we make decisions, our minds change, like we are mutable creatures. But at the same time, like these two decisions are so out of character. It would be like me being like, I'm going to go be an astronaut, which is just like inconsistent with literally everything in my life except for like one moment and as a fourth grader. Like, no.
Well, I think we'll get into some of this as we start to talk about specific moments and specific points in Anakin and Padme's relationship. So why don't we do that and get started talking about their first meeting? What sorts of notes do you have on their first meeting?
Oh, let's see here. Well, honestly, I kind of skimmed over that part. I possibly am a little biased. Obviously a little biased. So my first note about their interaction is, God, it's like he's manipulating her even as a child. I'll show you this. Oh, wow. I'll show you that. As he like drags her away, which is like normal behavior for an excited young boy. And I understand that, but I was very angry at that point already. And then the next subsequent comment on their interaction is that he failed to disclose that he had never won a race after like getting them to commit to this like very risky plan. Yeah. And I wrote red flags right there in all caps. So those are my first impressions based on my notes.
I have some notes on how Padme viewed Anakin in Phantom Menace. And I did have a note that is relevant to what you just said, where like she was not happy that Qui-Gon was going to pin all of their hopes and whether or not they were able to leave Tatooine on a 9-year-old winning a pod race when he had never won a race before.
Yeah. Yes.
Which, rightly so. I mean, she is only a 14-year-old, but she is obviously a mature 14-year-old, and Anakin is not a mature 9-year-old.
No. No. I mean, he's got skills, and he's obviously familiar with work, but his, like, attitude and how he, like, views the world is very immature. And stays immature.
So I found the quote where Padme and Qui-Gon are talking about what their plan is. And she says, are you sure about this? Trusting our fate to a boy we hardly know? The queen will not approve.
I love
and
that.
And Qui-Gon says, the queen does not need to know. And she says, well, I don't approve. And I'm just like, you have a very understandable and logical response to this situation.
Yeah. And it is interesting to know, having read Queen Shadow again, is that Qui-Gon was fully aware that she was the queen at that point. So he was pretty much still dismissing her.
And also I feel like Padme views Anakin 100% as a little kid. Like, yeah. He is not on the same level as her in any way, and she doesn't regard him in that way. Like, she might think that he's cute. Or, and by that I mean in a little boy way, like not in a romantic way. And again, I just think that that gap is so much more pronounced because she is very wise for her years and she's a queen and has real responsibilities. So I think there's just like this gulf between them, even though they're both technically still children.
Yeah. Hands down. And even like, I was just before this episode, I was looking up some things and they're like, oh, they always had a connection. I would not agree with that. Like, she's polite to him. She's kind to him. And she's definitely tolerant of him. But I wouldn't say that they're like, you know, this is a special bond between these two. Like, it just seemed like you would treat, you know, a cousin or like, you know,
I think she feels bad for him too.
Yeah.
Like she shows up and she's like, oh, you're a slave.
Yeah.
And obviously was affected by seeing him and seeing his mother be enslaved. But I definitely think that aspect was probably more prominent than her specific relationship with Anakin at that point.
Exactly. Like, even at the end, like, throughout, you know, she, with the big celebration on Naboo at the end, she smiles at him, but it's kind of just like, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't consider that to be, like,
a special connection.
Yeah. It's kind of just like, yep, you're here. You survived. Yay. Like,
so we also should talk about Anakin's initial reaction to her, which was, are you an angel?
Yeah. How do they even, I mean.
So I guess I didn't remember or didn't listen closely to that line previously, because angels, I guess, are an actual thing in Star Wars. Like, they are beings that exist in the Star Wars universe.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so he says, are you an angel? And she says, what? And then he says, an angel. I've heard the deep space pilots talk about them. They live on the moons of Iago? Not sure. I think. They're the most beautiful creatures in the universe.
Huh. I also didn't pay attention to that.
Yeah, because when I was watching it this past time, I was like, wait, what? Like, angels are actually a thing?
Apparently. Weird. So.
And then my note on that was, I'm not sure why he was just instantly, like, so taken with her and why he was clinging to her so much, because it is shown that, like, he does have friends. It's not like he is completely alone and all he has is his mom.
I think because she looks like his mom, that is, I mean, I realized that, like, that is after, did not realize how long pod racing was, which is not relevant to this conversation. And then I was like, wait a minute, Padme and Shmi look a lot alike. They both have, like, the high cheekbones, like, they're, like, granted, Natalie Portman's face is, like, structured a little bit differently, but, like, the hair, the, like, I don't know, it was very striking to me at that point for some reason that, like, they looked very similar, and so, like, later on, his connection to her made more sense because he missed his mom.
Yeah. I get then, it later yeah. on, but at this point, I'm just not sure why he was just, like, immediately so drawn to her, and then why he spent the next 10 years being obsessed with her.
I don't know either. Like, again, I did not feel like the connection was that strong that you would, like, dream about her or think about her every day for 10 years.
Like, is it just because she was nice to him and no one was nice to him usually?
I don't know. Yeah. Because I feel like, you know, if he's at Jedi, at the temple, like, he's gonna encounter people who are nice to him as well. Like, it is interesting that, like, aside from Obi-Wan, he apparently didn't have any friends, a Jedi of his own age.
Right.
But then again, if he's, like, that weird, like, if you just imagine him at temple being like, oh, I met this girl once, she was beautiful like an angel, and now I can't stop thinking about her, I'd be like, okay, weird kid over there.
Yeah.
That's unfair to weird children, because I was definitely the weird one.
Right, so. We've already established that we were both weird children.
Yeah.
But even not by my because standards. Of an obsession with a single person over the course of 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I mean, we can talk about this later, because this kind of gets into, like, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. Anakin has made it very clear that he doesn't, like, filter his emotions well. Which means they're projecting over the Force. Like, a Force sensitive could probably pick up the fact that he's got a lot of strong feelings. And so I just spent a lot of these films being like, he is probably broadcasting, like, loud and clear, obsession, obsession, Padme, Padme, Padme. And I'm just like, why is no one more concerned about this?
Like, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's probably part of the reason that Palpatine preyed on him.
Yeah. And I mean, he's, in Attack of the Clones, he says very concerning things to Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan just seems to, like, shrug it off. if my Padawan's like, I'd rather be dreaming of Padme, I'd be like, you shouldn't be doing that, guy. Like, maybe meditate.
Yeah, I am very interested for us to get into Clone Wars and to see what's going on with Obi-Wan. Because I don't know yet, because again, we have not watched Clone Wars. Maybe Obi-Wan really is not the person to be giving him advice.
Yeah. Yeah. Somehow still has like major sway on the Jedi Council for some inexplicable reason.
Because as I'm sure we'll get into, probably not this season, but maybe next season, Jedi are not great.
No. No. Like, and that, I mean, that again gets into like the inconsistencies of the prequels is just like, they're so wise, they're so wise. And then, well, miss this major thing. Just for plot convenience, it feels like.
Yeah, I think I made a note at some point, too, where I said, like, I'm torn between being annoyed that Anakin is a Jedi but doesn't want to follow the Jedi rules and just acknowledging that the Jedi rules are stupid and shouldn't exist. So I'm not quite sure how to feel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that being said, Anakin is just, like, so far beyond. Like, I mean, even if the Jedi rules made more sense, Anakin would still be breaking, like, literally any rule. They should still cut him off. Like, even if the rules were more, like, reasonable, he is so concerning to me throughout all the prequels that, like, a lot of my notes within the later ones is just, like, he's bad news. He's got to go. Like, what are you doing, Yoda? Stop having a conversation with him. You know, like, he's coming to you. You just need to cut this off. Cut him off. Cut him off. So I did want to note that Annie's conversation about, here we go. Wait. So at Qui-Gon's funeral, again, mm-hmm. Red flags. It's a funeral. There's literally a man burning on a pier. And yet Anakin decides at that point to turn to Obi-Wan and be like, what's going to happen to me? I'm just like, you couldn't wait? Like, wait till the man's done burning. Like, it just felt so, oh God.
So I just, messed up. In my head was like, what's going to happen to you? Exactly that.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Twice.
That's why you're respectful at funerals. You don't ask questions like that because who knows? Maybe someday you'll burn multiple times.
I mean, I guess granted, at that point, he was still a 9-year-old.
Yeah, maybe I'm putting too much on him at 9. You can tell that, like, there's no, very few redeeming qualities for Anakin at this point. I am, though, excited to watch Clone Wars because I did hear from some of my old coworkers that there's some, like, fleshed out, more believable romance between him and Padme in Clone Wars.
Yeah, I wonder how we'll feel about that.
Right? I mean, it's going to be better. Can't be worse.
Yeah. Hopefully. I guess so.
Yeah. I mean, George Lucas did not write Clone Wars, so it cannot be worse.
So, they don't see each other for 10 years, and in that whole time, Padme is a senator. That's part of the period that is explored in Queen's Shadow, and she is by and large just living her life like she's not thinking of Anakin every second. As we know from Queen's Shadow, she does mention her necklace every so often, and she did have Sabe go to Tatooine to try and free Shmi, which didn't work out, but it doesn't seem like she is nearly as preoccupied with Anakin as he is with her during that time. And then, so we open with Corday being killed, and it was at this moment that I just had to sit back and be like, wow, Padme's life kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Also, during these 10 years, she has been having the Trade Federation just constantly try and kill her.
Yep.
Everyone at this point is also just completely discounting her when she tells them that now Dooku is behind this most recent assassination attempt. And I just don't think she's really having a good time.
That's a good point.
I guess before we get into their interactions and when they meet again after 10 years, I'll just take a pause and talk about when I was trying to figure out why Padme was interested in Anakin and what there was in it for her.
Yeah.
I guess putting aside the fact that Anakin is attractive, which could be part of it, I just had to wonder if part of it was that her life was not great and she had a lot of responsibility and pressure and stress, and possibly she just wanted to be distracted by something.
Yeah, maybe. I'm just thinking, like, you know, if my life was like hers, I probably wouldn't pick someone who's, like, so clearly conflicted as Anakin. Like, that just seems guaranteed to be more stressful.
I mean, it is obviously more stressful in reality, and being involved with Anakin just complicates things more, but I don't know. I don't know. Like, I really was just trying to come up with
any reason.
And there were some other points, too, where I asked myself that again. And we can get to those later. But, like, she obviously fights against it for half the movie. And then we also
more than half
on our last episode about her prior relationship and how she apparently fought against that, let it happen for a little while, and then was like, no, 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 I can't do this. So I don't know, like, she seems to just keep trying to be logical and trying to tell herself and others that she has duties that she has to uphold and she doesn't have time for it and it's not the right thing to do, but then, like, she seems to just give up after a certain point, and I don't really know why.
I don't either. I just, like, I don't know. Her responses, just, like, consistently in regards to him, were baffling. Like, I guess skip ahead a little bit. So, what I'm looking at in my notes is, like, shortly after they meet again, like, he's guarding her, and he's talking about how Master Obi-Wan manages not to see that, like, she's like, oh, he's grown up. You've grown up, Annie. And he's like, Master Obi-Wan managed not to see him. I'm really ahead of him. I'm too predictable. He's overly critical. It's not fair. I'm like, it is so childish. It is like he is still 9 years old. And yet, after that, she says, our mentors see more of our flaws than we would like. That's how we grow. And it's just, like, such a measured adult response that it's just, like, does she want to, like, I don't know. Does she want to talk to a child? Like, it's just, like, her life now is just, like, trying to make sense of his, like, pettiness and his irrationality and his self-absorption, his resentment, his entitlement, like...
Yeah, well, I mean, when he and Obi-Wan first come in at the beginning of Attack of the Clones, like, every single person in that room is just like, wow.
Yeah.
This guy is a lot. And then all of their, like, none of their interactions seem to be positive.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. We get, please don't look at me like that. It makes me uncomfortable.
And then he smirks.
And then he's assigned to guard her. And she says, I'm afraid. And he says, this is my first assignment on my own. I am too. So, like, yeah. He can't even indicate that he's going to be able to effectively guard her.
Yeah.
She is trying to tell him where they should go on Naboo so that they will be out of the way and people can't find them, and he tries to insinuate that he knows better than her.
Like, yeah.
I just don't know, from Padme's perspective, why she would look at Anakin and be like, oh yes, I'm interested.
Yeah. He doesn't respect her as a person, and he doesn't respect her, like, her career choice. Like, later on in the picnic, he says that, like, you know, let me see if I can find this quote. Oh, you know, he's like pressuring her to talk about her first kiss. And she eventually does. And then he's like, what happened to him? And she goes, oh, he became an artist. And then he says to her face, maybe he was the smart one. Like, way to belittle 10 years, like more than 10 years of her life. If she entered the junior legislative program at 8, like, you basically said that she's done nothing worthwhile if she's in politics.
Yeah. So not only that, but he is visibly upset with her for kissing someone.
Yeah.
12 years ago, before he ever met her.
Yep. Yeah. Also, in the course of that conversation, when they're talking about politics, he shows no comprehension. And then he sits there and says, I think I, you know, maybe that would be better if, like, there was, like, a strong man to lead everything. Like, he's in favor of a dictatorship, very clearly. And instead of, like, legitimately engaging with him, which I feel like Padme would do because she does not believe in dictatorships, she's like, you're making fun of me? Like, no, man, he's being dead serious. He's not making fun of her. And then he got smiles and they laugh it off. But, like, I'm like, no, there are so many red flags in this entire conversation.
So this is probably my most emphatic note. And we were talking before we started recording and saying that if we were to read our notes verbatim, it would probably be too much, but my note about that in particular is such red flags about dictators, and then in all caps, like, this is what you dedicated your life to, bitch.
It's true, and she's so committed, and, like, you know, here he is, he doesn't even try to, like, learn. He has no respect for what her opinions are, no respect for her at all. Like, it's so frustrating. Like,
yeah, and then this is where I started to get angry at Padme. And I was like, why am I getting angry at her? And it's just because, like, again, you know that she's intelligent, she's accomplished, like, she has had a political career since she was 14. And he's just, like, coming in and essentially mansplaining to her. And she's just like, ha, 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 ha.
Yes. And then prior to that, like, the whole conversation about sand, and then he's, like, stroking her back. Like, my notes that I wanted to read out loud is, like, I cannot fathom how him touching her back is supposed to be romantic. I am screaming inside because literally I was watching that scene. I'm like, don't touch her. Don't touch her. She obviously does not want to be touched by you. And yet it just, like, cuts away before, like, any reaction can happen. She doesn't say, oh, and she doesn't lean into him. She doesn't, like, hit, like, flinch away, which is what she should do. Like, it's just the cutaways are so awkward and so, like, it's like George Lucas, like, well, that's a scene, I'm gonna cut to this because I don't want to have to deal with this, like, very logical repercussions of this super creepy action.
So that's right before they kiss, right?
Yes.
So again, yeah, we should also make it clear that for both of us, he just was behaving in a very creepy manner.
You're right.
From the second that he saw her again. And she was not into it. And their kiss truly comes out of nowhere and is very awkward because it's mere moments before, maybe not in, like, real time that's elapsed in the movie, but a few scenes before that is when they're in the palace on Naboo and she's telling the queen what her plans are, and he keeps, like, interrupting.
Yeah.
and she's like, excuse me? And she's very pissed. She's not having it, and she's, like, giving him dagger looks. And then all of a sudden, when they're on that balcony, they kiss.
Yep, you're right. It doesn't cut away immediately after the hand thing. They kiss for some reason, after that. Then it cuts away.
Again, it leaves me just asking myself, what happened?
I also was upset even before, like, the excuse me thing is, like, definitely due to E.K. Johnson. Again, major kudos. I, like, bought in, or, like, was at least considering, like, Naboo being like, oh, this is a cool political structure, da da. And she made such good choices in The Phantom Menace. And then, like, as soon as Anakin comes into the picture, it's just like, you know, I wasn't the youngest elected queen. I think I was just too young. And I'm just like, you're showing more maturity than Anakin is now. And it's just like, it felt like it was like forced to like make her seem vulnerable in that moment. And I just like fundamentally disagreed.
I had a note about that too, where I was like, wow, she's being very critical of herself, saying that she wasn't ready to be queen. I'm like, you obviously were.
Yeah, you did great. I feel like if George Lucas had like allowed any sort of like agency on Padme's behalf first, like, you know, instead of making Anakin so like creepy and stalker-ish, had instead like allowed like them to just be kind of thrown together and like created like a bond, a connection there, and just kind of like, because they spend this like more than half the movie in this like weird, like he's way into her, she's like,
it's putting like the antagonistic brakes on her part.
Yeah. And I feel like if he wanted it to be like a believable romance, like he could have allowed like, you know, Anakin to be like selfless and like, you know, maybe he's like tortured by these inner demons with his mother, but like to her, you know, he's supportive, he's respectful, he's like doing all these things. And then like eventually the relationship would grow. And so by like, you know, the last 45 minutes of the movie, I would be buying into that relationship. But instead, from the get-go, Anakin is way too into her. It's creepy as hell. And then like it just like suddenly resolves itself when they hit Geonosis.
So here's a thought that I just had.
Yes.
I obviously can't know what George Lucas was thinking. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the relationship between Han and Leia is successful. Yes. And they have that banter back and forth. And Leia pretending to resist for a while. But that is very different in execution. And
yes.
Han doesn't come off like a creeper. So I don't know if George Lucas was like, well, that worked, so I'm going to make the female love interest just like keep putting up resistance and putting up resistance. And then finally they'll come together.
My thought theory there, like, Carrie Fisher did a, like, significant, like, Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford had, like, input into their characters' dialogue, right? Like, there were revisions made because of, like, how they reacted, right?
I know for sure with Carrie Fisher, at least.
Yeah. Because I'm wondering if, like, I've heard Darth Brooks talk about, like, the influence of George Lucas's wife and, like, how she had an influence on him, and whether or not, like, that is kind of, like, it was like a steadying force there, which is why that relationship ended up being like the wonderful relationship that we see in the movies, is because George Lucas actually didn't have direct control over that dialogue. Like there were revisions made. And so like maybe he just didn't have those kind of like steadying forces in the prequels.
Yeah. Cause the dialogue
is so bad.
Is bad. And the next thing I was going to talk about was the dinner scene where, again, where are the handmaidens? She's just completely by herself with Anakin, which I don't know why anyone would think that was a good idea, just in general. Like, yes, he's a Jedi. I mean, I guess that's why people were willing to leave them alone, but not sure about that decision.
I know, right? Like, I mean, why would not having more eyes on her be even more compelling? And it's not like she's trying to, like, hide it. She, like, shows up on Tatooine and is just, like, when they go looking for Shmi. So, I mean, she just, like, straight up introduces herself. I'm Padme. Like, she doesn't come up with, like, a fake name, or I guess maybe Padme is her, like, secret name. But, like, she's not very subtle. And so, like, it doesn't make any sense to not have her handmaidens or, like, someone else watching out for her.
She's not good at hiding.
No.
Not at all. This is where Anakin's monologue comes in about their kiss.
Oh, God, the guilt tripping?
I'll go ahead and read that.
Yes.
From the moment I met you all those years ago, not a day has gone by when I haven't thought of you. And now that I'm with you again, I'm in agony. The closer I get to you, the worse it gets. The thought of not being with you, I can't breathe. I'm haunted by the kiss that you never should have given me. My heart is beating, hoping that kiss will not become a scar. You are in my very soul, tormenting me. What can I do? I will do anything you ask. And I just want to point out, this is how IMDb has it.
Oh, yeah.
Uncomfortable pause. If you are suffering as much as I am, please tell me. And she looks so uncomfortable when he's saying that.
I wrote, everything in this scene is just screaming abuse. He's so manipulative. And then shortly thereafter, I looked up signs of an abusive relationship. So I found a Psychology Today article that says 9 very early signs of emotional and verbal abuse. And literally it's like a blamer, resentments, entitlements, superiority, pettiness, sarcasm, deceit, intentional and unintentional, minor jealousy, guys who, quote, go too fast, defined as whatever makes you uncomfortable, do not respect boundaries. One definition of abuse is that which violates personal boundaries. It is not flattering that someone wants you so much that he does not care about whether or not you are comfortable. Make sure that any man you become interested in shows respect for your comfort level in all senses of the word. So yeah, I was pretty livid at that point.
Well, then she has a completely understandable and logical response.
Yes.
Where she says, I can't, we can't, it's not possible. Anakin says, anything is possible, Padme, listen to me. And then she says, no, you listen. We live in a real world. Come back to it. You're studying to become a Jedi. I'm a senator. If you follow your thoughts through to conclusion, it will take us to a place we cannot go, regardless of the way we feel about each other. And of course, his response is, then you do feel something.
Yeah. And then I know in this same scene, he's like, you're asking me to be rational. That's something I cannot do. And then, like, I wrote, don't become a Jedi then.
I mean, that's a good point. Like, I know that's his whole life at this point, and he probably feels like he was rescued and brought into the Jedi Order, and this is just what he is meant to be doing. But at the same time, like, if you truly can't live within the confines of it, and you want to be with Padme so badly, then why wouldn't you at least consider leaving?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this is Attack of the Clones when they're talking about Count Dooku. And like when they dismiss Padme at the beginning, they're like, oh, Dooku used to be a Jedi. And I'm like, wow, that seems really casual. Like, used to be a Jedi, you could just leave, huh? And then later on, like, there's just so much resistance to Anakin just leaving the order. And it's just like, why? Like, just leave. No one, I mean, if he just left, that would like solve all their problems. I mean, she'd still be a senator, but he would just be her consort, and he'd be complaining the whole time because he'd be relegated to, like, a minor role, and right. That is not obviously something he can't handle.
So, I mean, it probably wouldn't have worked out, but it might have not been as catastrophic.
Yeah. Maybe he could find something different, like being a pilot, a rugged space pilot that, like, takes risks and, like, you know, does all the things he wants to do riskily.
But yeah, so then I just had another note that was like, why does she give in after this?
Yeah.
Like, after she understands the situation and tells him, like, this is not going to work out, and here's why, and you know it. Like, again, it just makes it so, like, regrettably hard for me to defend her.
Yeah. I mean, and then, okay, so there's that whole scene, which is just so, like,
I do have one more thing to say about that. So, like, then he's out on the balcony and she comes out because he's upset. She's like, what's going on? He's like, I just need to go to Tatooine.
In her nightgown.
I'm yeah, like, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I'm like, she's out there in her nightgown. Like, did they just immediately like have sex? Like, I honestly had never thought about that before, but I'm just like, what does this mean?
I feel like they did not. But also, I do feel like I would be like, what I had written about that was, let's see, I said, why is she coming out to him in her nightgown? Seriously, he is trouble. What are you doing?
So I do want to also flag that I think this is also kind of the point where she starts to take on this nurturing role.
Yes.
Toward him, where she is comforting him. And I feel like that just happens again and again over the course of the rest of this movie and Revenge of the Sith, where she is just constantly trying to, like, soothe him.
Yeah. Yes, because the next thing is, like, so we go to Tatooine, and I wrote, so she goes from shooting pistols and flying her own spacecraft to hugging her man before he goes to murder sand people. And then they, like, he goes and does his thing, and his next interaction with her, like, extended interaction with her, is just so, I know he just lost his mother, but all I felt was, like, profound annoyance and, like, contempt. He's like, why'd she have to die? And then, you know, Padme responds, you're not all powerful. And he's like, I should be. I will be the most powerful Jedi ever. It's yeah. all Obi-Wan's fault. He's jealous. I'm like, dude, walk away.
This is probably, like, my fourth note now that's just like, wow, Anakin is not a mature, insert age. I'm like, he's not a mature 19-year-old. Padme yeah. was more mature as a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's his famous speech about how he killed them all, them being the Tusken Raiders.
Yeah.
And I will just say, I still don't understand exactly why his mom died. I guess they took her captive. There's the whole scene with, I guess, who is his stepfather, Kleeglar, is talking about how they're looking for her and can't find her. And then also in that scene, too, he's just like, what? You didn't find her?
Yeah. And he's like, I'd still be out there if I hadn't lost my legs, you know?
Yeah, he's like, no, I can't. Like, he's just like,
to find my mother.
Yeah. Yeah. So he basically is blaming them for her not having come back, even though he's like, we looked for her for a month and brought all these people out to look for her. And then I lost my leg. So yeah. I just can't look anymore. And, like, I'm very sad because she was my wife. And Anakin just, like, stands up and is like, well, I'm going to just go and find her then.
His complete dismissal of, like, his stepbrother, who's been nothing but nice to him. And, like, even later on, like, I'm like, maybe it does make sense that he didn't try to go find Luke or, like, I mean, his child, as he knew, with his stepfamily, because, like, he dismissed them from the get-go. Like, the sheer amount of disinterest and, like, literally this entire portion, again with literally, entire portion of his mother's life is just like, whoa, that's intense. Like, he doesn't even try to be civil, really. Like, he's just writing them off and blaming them.
Yeah, so obviously he goes and finds his mom, and she's, like, on the verge of death for some reason. And then I guess we can infer that she was going to die anyway sometime soon, but, like, gives herself permission to die because she was able to see Anakin. And then he slaughters all the Tusken Raiders, and I don't know. At some point later, I might have thoughts about how Tusken Raiders are treated in Star Wars and how
Agreed.
They are discussed.
Agreed.
And the fact that maybe his killing Tusken Raiders versus humans may have had connotations that it wasn't quite as bad. However, it's still really bad. And
yeah.
He goes back and sees Padme and tells her that he killed them all. And her response is, to be angry is to be human.
Yeah. Again, another instance of just, like, a very confusing response to very concerning statements. Like, he says they're like animals and I slaughtered them like animals, but he recognizes that they're not. Like, he says women and children. Like, he didn't, like, completely dehumanize them until, later on. Like, there's some point in that conversation, he's like, they were people, but then they're animals. And all I wrote was, run away, Padme, run away, because there's just so many red flags. Like, you've got to go. Don't yeah. stick around.
And then part of this conversation, too, is his saying, one day I will become the greatest Jedi ever.
Mm-hmm.
I will even learn how to stop people from dying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So clearly he cannot accept his mother's death.
No. And again, like, Yoda picks up on it. Like, he's like, oh, pain, suffering, you know, young Skywalker. And I'm just like, again, this would be another opportunity for you to be like, yeah, we should not have him be a Jedi. He obviously is struggling. Let's not put him in these positions where it's easy to get lost.
So then I think the next time we would have Padme Anakin content to talk about would be on Geonosis. So yep. They go there looking for Obi-Wan and end up getting captured and sentenced to fight in the arena. And for whatever reason are put into a chariot together and have a whole scene while they're waiting to go into the arena.
A scene that makes no sense. I'm sorry, it just doesn't. Even with the nurturing thing, even with, like, her baffling responses to his, like, very weird things he says. It is definitely a direct pivot to go from that to... I love you. I just have to tell you. And then she, like, is prepared. Like, she's got a bobby pin. I don't know what she has. A hairpin.
Yeah.
She's going into this prepared. Like, she's not going to just, like, lay down and die. And yet she still feels the need to, like, confess this, like, very suspicious love.
So let's recap at this point. They've met again after 10 years.
Yes.
Anakin has, like, off the bat just been completely over the top, obsessive with her.
Not respectful for
like much of this movie. She has seemed like she's not having it, and she doesn't appreciate that he doesn't respect her and just doesn't like the way that he's talking to her or treating her. Then all of a sudden, after he tells her that he doesn't like sand, they kiss.
Yep.
Then she tells him they shouldn't be kissing, they shouldn't be doing this. Then they go to Tatooine.
Where I feel like she's being nice.
His mom has just died, yes, but he's also confessed to killing many individuals. And then they are now in this moment in the chariot, and Anakin says to her, don't be afraid. And she says, I'm not afraid to die, which, like, she's not.
Yeah.
She has had numerous assassination attempts against her. She's been the queen. She's been a senator. She's had all these people plotting against her. Like, she knows what it's like to be in mortal danger. And then she says, I've been dying a little bit each day since you came back into my life, which I feel like is not a positive thing.
And also, like, not true. I'm sorry. Like, there's no way since the very moment that he came back into her life. Like, even when she saw him the first time, she wasn't like, oh, hey. Like, she's like, oh, hi. Like,
yeah. She's like, Annie?
Little Annie? Oh,
my
gosh.
You're still the little boy that I knew on Tatooine.
Yeah. And then he gets all resentful. He's like, oh, she barely looked at me. Like, anyways. Yeah. So that's just, like, an outright untruth.
Yeah. So then Anakin says, what are you talking about? And she just says, I love you. And then Anakin says this, and every time I hear it, I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
You love me? I thought we had decided not to fall in love.
It's so petty.
That we'd be forced to live a lie and that it would destroy our lives. Like, he's just, like, throwing her words back at her, being like, well, yep. I thought you said this. Like, yep. He doesn't say, I love you too. Like, oh, we might be about to die. I love you too. He's like, I thought that we weren't going to fall in love.
Yep. Even in that moment, he's so petty and so petulant. Like, at that point, I'd be like, forget it. You know, I don't know what I was thinking. Let's go face these monsters. Go, chariot. Like.
So obviously, they don't die.
Yeah.
However.
Even in that fight. He still, like, has not conceptualized her as, like, her own competent agent, like, able to, like, do her own thing. Like, he turns to Obi-Wan and is just like, what about Padme? And he's like, she's doing fine on her own because she unlocked her own handcuffs, climbed to the top of the pole, and was, like, suitably defending herself, but still needed Anakin, apparently, to kill the monster. Like, it was, I shouldn't say monster either. It has a name, species. But, yeah, it just, again, reiterated the fact that, like, he does not view her as an actual person. She's, like, an object of desire, and he, like, fails to recognize her autonomy at all points. All right.
So you brought this up that I like wasn't even thinking about, but there is also the scene where they're trying to escape and she falls out of the ship.
So as I mentioned before we started, like I was fast forwarding things and I was fast forwarding this scene because I'm like, oh, they're on the ship, whatever. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm like, wait, what happened to Padme? And so beforehand, we had to look that scene up. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. So in that scene, she falls out and Anakin is just like, oh my God, we have to go back and get her. And Obi-Wan is like, no, we can't. And Anakin is just like, what do you mean? What do you mean? We have to go back and save Padme. And then Obi-Wan says, what do you think Padme would do in this situation? And Anakin is just like, you're right.
Yep.
100% accurate.
Yeah. My notes is, did she just fall from the ship? Is that what happened? Yeah, so she falls from the ship. They speed off to fight Count Dooku. Anakin gets his arm partially sliced off. Yep, it's gone. And then Padme, like, very competently tells the clones, like, no, we have to get to the hangar. Let's go. Like, she is on it. She just fell from a gunship, and she's, like, ready to go in the next scene. And so they meet up with Anakin at the hangar, and she runs towards him, hugs him, and they kiss, and, like, very obvious, like, Obi-Wan's there, surrounded by clones, like, there's other people around, and yet there's no concern here, like...
Well, I mean, I feel like before that, just the fact that he was talking to Obi-Wan, like, I've dreamed of Padme every day for 10 years, I wish I could be with Padme, I'd rather be dreaming of Padme, like, how could he not know?
Yeah, exactly, like, it's creepy, and also concerning from a Jedi Padawan, like... Again, going to the point, like, he is he's broadcasting all over the Force. Like, his feelings, he's probably just, like, this giant sign that's, like, neon, Padme, Padme. And they're like, you know what? We should put Anakin in charge of guarding her. That seems like a great idea.
Well, it is Palpatine that says that that's what should happen.
And the Jedi Council, who, like, should be at least picking up on some of those projections, just agree? Like... Yeah, unless Palpatine was, like, shrouding Anakin's very concerning emotions. Maybe.
I don't know.
When we talk about Palpatine, like, I spent so much of the prequels being like, what is his goal here? Like, what does he want this to accomplish? Like, at one point, when we talk about it, Revenge of the Sith, I'm like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Like, I can figure out what he wants to do. A lot of times with Attack of the Clones, I'm just like, this seems counterintuitive to your end goal.
Well, I feel like he's just going through apprentices. Like, he was like, Darth Maul? No. Dooku? No. Gotta find a new one.
I had never realized how short Darth Maul was.
Yeah.
Like, watching that fight scene, I'm like, whoa, what? I mean, granted, Liam Neeson's, like, gigantic. So, we go from there, where the kiss is, like, not noticed by Obi-Wan, supposedly. And then, the next scene we see with them is their secret marriage.
Yes.
So it goes from, like, it is, I checked, because I had to stop it. Like, I couldn't make it through the last 45 minutes, and I'm like, I can't do this. Like, it was at the scene when they're about, like, they're on the chariots, and I'm like, oh my God. So it was at 45 minutes from the end that is the sum of their romantic relationship in Attack of the Clones. Like, when they're actually, like, in a romantic relationship. And it comprises of three scenes. The fight, the kiss after Anakin loses his arm, and then their marriage. It's just like, you had all the time in the world. Like, Attack of the Clones isn't a short movie to, like, sell us on this romance. And it is, I'm not sold.
No. And it's just not romantic.
No.
And I feel like George Lucas thought it was so romantic. And then they have a beautiful theme across the stars that John Williams did, so obviously it's incredible, and it's, like, a very romantic, gorgeous theme, and every time I hear it, I'm just like, oh, but this is for Anakin and Padme.
And the droids being the only ones at the marriage, like, where is Sabe? Where is her family? Where is anyone? Like, her family wouldn't be judging her. Sabe should have staged an intervention, but she would be there for her 110%, and instead, it's the droids, a terrible wedding dress, and then a long lookout. Like, it's not romantic. So, like, not even like, embracing. They're kissing each other, stare their shock still, and then they, like, slowly rotate, stare off into the distance, and think, oh, no, what did we do? Like, there was an earlier scene, too, that I wanted to mention. It was a cut scene, and they were just sitting there looking at each other, and then it cut away. It was just a random scene where they're just, like, looking, and then they look away. And I wrote, did George Lucas forget to give them lines? It's so awkward.
Yeah, I mean, no one being at their wedding also begs the question, like, did she send the handmaidens away at some point because of her relationship with Anakin?
Which, again, is a sign of a manipulative relationship. He's isolating her. Or she's, like, letting herself be isolated.
They're all gone.
Yeah.
In Revenge of the Sith.
There's not a single handmaiden. Which, again, over and over, where is Sabe? Where is Sabe? Why I thought she was dead in Queen.
Okay, so we're going to move on to the final prequel trilogy movie, Revenge of the Sith. And the first scene that we have between Anakin and Padme is when she announces her pregnancy to him. And I know that some time has passed in between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, and that's what is portrayed in Clone Wars. So once we get to that and see more of Clone Wars, I'm sure we'll have things to say about how that time is filled in. That being said, I guess they have seen each other at some points in between, but I think, like, several years have passed.
Yeah, he got her pregnant.
He did. You had mentioned earlier that he is not being very subtle when he sees her. Like, he runs over to her and is kissing her. And once again, she's like, no, 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 we shouldn't do this. Not here. And he's just like, why not here? And you were talking about how, is there surveillance? Like, aren't there cameras? And then you said something like, well, I don't know if there is surveillance. But yeah, that's how Obi-Wan knows that he killed the youngling. So there obviously is.
Yes. Like, it seems so inconsistent because, like, the temple has surveillance, but, like, you don't see the same level of concern, like, oh, someone might be watching. Maybe that's, like, a product of our current world more than it reflects on Star Wars. But I just wonder if that's just, like, a massive oversight, because I feel like, you know, they're not taking very many precautions, and yet they're still trying to, like, think this is a secret, even though, again, she's, like, very visibly pregnant, like, multiple times. I mean, obviously, through most of it. And, yeah.
Well, this was one of my questions, too. Like, were they actively trying to prevent pregnancy? You would think that they would be, because their marriage is secret. No one is supposed to know about it. No one knows that Padme is married, which we discussed a little bit in our Queen's Shadow episode, that on Naboo, apparently, it is culturally accepted for people to have children without having a partner, but that might not necessarily be the case for everyone that she's around in the Senate. So I have to wonder how that all went down and what questions might have been asked, but you would think that she probably wouldn't want to become pregnant under the circumstances.
Yeah. It makes me think that they weren't, like, honestly, my guess is that they weren't doing anything about it. Like, from my impression of, like, what's going to happen in the Clone Wars, is Anakin's gone a lot. So, like, I don't know. I feel like the chances, like, if you're not seeing your significant other, like, on a very frequent basis, like, it kind of makes sense that it takes this long, like, 3 years to get pregnant. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe that's an assumption. That is just, like, flat out an assumption, right? Like,
I guess so. I guess it's also an assumption that birth control exists in the Star Wars universe, but I would assume that it does.
I would also.
These are all questions that I don't know the answers to, that there may or may not be answers to, but of course I had to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, or, I mean, like, I don't know if the Force causes issues either. Like, you know, maybe it's more difficult to get pregnant if you are a Jedi or your significant other is a Jedi. I don't know if the Force has, like, repercussions there. I'm just
thinking, the Force, like, just knows you're a Jedi. It's like, oh, no.
Well, no, because I'm thinking, like, if you're so strong in the Force, like, maybe it's an inhibitive thing, right? Like, I guess I'm drawing from like urban fantasy and werewolves and like, you know, non solely human entities often really do struggle like with fertility, like, you know.
Well, I mean, like, in that circumstance, all I can think of is like Laurel K. Hamilton, which I have not read, but I am somewhat familiar with. And I feel like that makes sense. Like, if you are a person that is a were animal, like, then you wouldn't be able to reproduce with someone who was fully human. But
it's not just that. It's the fact that, like, the changes happen and, like, it's really hard to carry a pregnancy to term, in most urban fantasy werewolf situations. And the same thing goes with the fae, right? For fairies, like, it is more difficult for a fae to produce viable offspring than it is for, like, a human and a fae, or, like, two humans. So, like, just, I think, coming from, like, that urban fantasy background, I'm, like, thinking, like, maybe the forest causes disruptions in, like, your reproductive abilities. So, I mean, because you don't, I guess it depends. You know, Shmi obviously did not have a father when it came to Anakin. Anakin was able to reproduce. Leia was able to reproduce, but like one kid each, like that's not like they're, you know, massive force strong family.
Well, this gets into more than just this conversation about birth control, in that why was Anakin able to reproduce at that moment? Was it because the Force foresaw that he was going to go down this path and become Darth Vader? And knew that it needed to bring Luke and Leia into the world?
Ooh, we should totally talk about, like, the Force as an entity in a later season. Because, like, I, you know, think immediately thinking of Luke being, like, the Force is just, you know, between every living being. Like, it doesn't have, like, a plan. Granted, that is Luke speaking at a very bitter delusion point in his life. But, like, that is an interesting thought, that, like, it's almost like,
because the implication is that the Force brought Anakin into being for a reason.
The midichlorians.
So yes, through the midichlorians, whatever. I don't want to talk about the midichlorians. But, I mean, Anakin was brought into the universe for a reason, and it's implied that it was the Force, like, the will of the Force, that he was born. But then he starts going down this path that it's not going to benefit the galaxy.
Yeah. Is George Lucas Catholic by any means? Like, I'm just like, this is sounding so much like the birth of Jesus. Google this.
I don't think so, because I feel like I would know if he was, but let me just check.
Yeah. I mean, like, I probably shouldn't make
what religion is George Lucas? Thanks for releasing it. I mean, obviously we all know that Star Wars has a lot of Eastern philosophy woven into it. But according to this, he grew up in the Methodist Church. And he then became interested in comparative mythologies and eventually found a distinct interest in Eastern religions. Lucas now considers himself a Buddhist Methodist, identifying strongly with both his current beliefs and the beliefs of his childhood.
So that, I mean, like, that's pretty strong, like, Christian overtones there. Like, the virgin birth, you know, for the greater good.
Yeah, I also just, like, found this article that says George Lucas's first credit was for this Catholic short film.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, so
able to get a small part in the production team for a short film based on Psalm 42. Oh, okay. I don't know if that really has any bearing response on this, but that's what came up when I googled George Lucas Catholic.
And granted, like, I mean, having been raised Catholic, of course, like, my first, like, go-to Christian faith is Catholicism, shockingly. So, like, it could be, like, Christianity broadly with the virgin birth.
Right. Oh,
for some reason, I feel like Catholics put more emphasis on that than others.
Yes. Well, I mean, so I should say I was also raised Catholic. I'm not practicing by any means at this point, but that was what I grew up with. And Catholicism definitely puts much more emphasis on Mary than any other Christian denomination, I would say.
Yeah. But the story of the virgin birth is, like, consistent throughout, and that's really, like, yeah, the salient point.
But they don't revere her in the way that Catholics do.
I'm going to have so many thoughts about, like, how women are portrayed in general, and then also alien species as well. Like, watching the prequels, I was just blind. I was like, it was like a switch flipped, and I was just like, holy cow, what? Anyways, we can talk about that later. Racism. Anyways.
So, getting back to this actual conversation and Padme telling Anakin that she's pregnant, he definitely doesn't seem happy at first, I would say.
Despite saying that he's happy? Yes. Yes. I wrote, this is a happy moment, unconvincingly.
And I don't quite know why he's not happy. I think maybe given his prior behavior, it is partially because he's jealous that there's going to be someone else that Padme is going to be giving attention to. And I think he also just doesn't want things to change.
Yeah, I would entirely agree with that. Not being in control of the situation, right? Like, he didn't make the decision to have kids. It just sort of happened outside of his control. And he definitely likes to be in control.
Yeah. I think the next thing I had to talk about was, again, they're not being discreet in any way. Like, he's staying in her apartment.
Yeah.
I guess no one is around, but they're, like, sitting out on her little patio thing. Like, again, she's in her nightgown. Like, they are not good at hiding their relationship.
No. No. And, yeah, somehow no one knows, I guess. It's, like, the world's most open secret, I feel like.
So, this is after she's told him she's pregnant, and then she's talking to him about how she wants to go back to Naboo and she wants to have the baby there and is going to, like, create a nursery. And she obviously is very excited about it. And Anakin is just kind of, like, not. And then also is kind of spending the whole time being upset about the fact that he's been having dreams about her dying now that she's told him that she's pregnant. And she asks him what's wrong, and he's just like, nothing. And then she says, how long is it going to take for us to be honest with one another? And at that point, I was just like, whoa. You've been married, like, for multiple years at this point. And, like, I know that they are apart a lot, but that just caused me to ask myself, like, how well do they really know each other even at this point?
Agreed. Oh my gosh, hands down. I'm like, you guys were never honest with each other. Like, what are you even basing that off of? Like, I mean, yeah. You can't expect honesty if it's not based in reality.
And then she also says something about how the Queen of Naboo, like, wouldn't want her to be a senator anymore.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yes. What?
Yeah. I noticed that, too. I wrote, why wouldn't the queen allow her to continue serving in the Senate? It's Naboo.
Yeah, I felt it made no sense. Like,
no.
Based on all the information I had, I couldn't fathom why the queen would be like, Padme, you have a child now. It's time for you to retire.
Yeah, exactly. And especially for Naboo. And, like, I feel like going back to the point that, like, even if you're interacting with people who, like, may be more conservative in those matters, like, the fact that they're from Naboo, you can't expect, like, it would be so problematic for someone to, like, judge another culture who might be an entirely different species by their own moral norms, that I feel like, you know, there has to be, like, more open-mindedness in the Senate because, like, you're dealing with entirely different, like, mating rituals, entirely different, like, biological imperatives. You can't just be like, she had a child out of wedlock. Like, I feel like that's so passe.
It's really weird. I mean, I don't know if it was the out of wedlock aspect. Again, this was obviously before E.K. Johnston wrote Queen's Shadow, so we didn't know a lot about what the customs were on Naboo, and I'm sure that that wasn't in anyone's mind as they were making this movie, but yeah, it just seems messed up. And
yeah,
later on, like, Leia has a child and she's a senator. She's married. Is that why it's okay? I don't know.
Right? I mean, like, is this just like the entire galaxy is just super prudish and uptight when it comes to, like, I feel like that can't be the case. It has to be like George Lucas just having a very narrow scope of, like, well, they can't reveal it because of this. Like,
because yeah, she's unmarried, as far as everyone else knows.
Yeah. Or because, like, women can't serve with children. Like, I'm just like, man, this is problematic no matter what way you cut it.
Yeah, it's true.
I did want to note that not only after she, like, calls him too, how long is it going to take us to be honest with each other? Like, eventually just does dismiss it. Like, I mean, initially, I think he does eventually speak up, but he's just only a dream. Meh, meh. I don't want to tell you anything. Like, his initial reaction, again, is to dismiss her.
But then she gets upset. And then this is when she says, hold me again like you did by the lake on Naboo.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
When there was only our love, no politics, no plotting. And I was just like, that was not ever the case.
No, I wrote that too. And then,
like, what are you, like, I don't know. It was never uncomplicated. Like, she's being nostalgic for them just being in love. It's like,
when?
Yeah.
When was that? I didn't see it. I was also very irked by, like, they talked about, I feel like it may have been the same exchange. I have it, like, it might have been a different scene. She makes a comment about, like, politics again, right? Like, and again, I know, like, politics is probably their issue as a couple. But, and maybe this will be addressed in Clone Wars because time has elapsed and, like, who knows? But, like, it seemed to be, like, such a sudden thing for him to be, like, dictatorship, and then also he's just, like, fervently, like, in favor of the Republic, and, like, he calls her out and just, like, you know, I don't believe we're on the side of evil, like, I don't believe that, you're sounding like a separatist, like, I'm like,
it is, like, in that same scene, because she's like,
yeah,
oh, I don't know what to do, like, what if we're not on the right side?
Yes.
And what if the Republic is not what it used to be, and it's not what we should defend anymore? And he's just like, what do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and it seemed like such, I mean, again, time has elapsed, and, like, you know, Clone Wars probably is going to deal with this. And so it just seemed very sudden and, like, disjointed, his response to politics, that, like, suddenly he's just, like, all in favor of the Republic. And then there are so many points, like, throughout this entire thing where he's just straight up honest with her, and, like, if, with the right response, like, He's telling her how he feels multiple times. Like, he doesn't respect her. And then, like, he's talking about, like, his conflict being a Jedi and how he wants more. And she totally just doesn't take that seriously. And I'm like, this is concerning. Like, he is straight up saying he's looking for more than what he has. Like, you should be very concerned at this point.
One of the other things that bothers me a lot, and this is something that I alluded to in our Queen Shadow episode, is that, especially in this movie and at this point, it seems like Padme just becomes a device.
Yes. She's fridged.
Like, she's just a catalyst for Anakin's fall. Like, at this point, her role is just to be tragic.
Yep. I'm with you. I'm so with you on that. Like, yeah. I feel, I mean, maybe Anakin's attitude towards Padme is, like, writ small for George Lucas's attitude towards Padme, which is pretty much, she is a plot device.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's just so frustrating to see, because it's not the case when she's first introduced. And then slowly, as their romance begins, and as we get to the point where he's on the verge of turning to the dark side, like, she loses all of her agency.
Yeah. I was really struggling with this. Like, I had multiple conversations with Darth Brooks about this, because, like, it's so frustrating that, like, George Lucas seems to have this trend of, like, creating very strong female characters and then just totally just, like, dismissing them. Granted, maybe it's not so much a trend. I know, right? I'm just like, well, so we were talking about Lucasfilm being involved with Indiana Jones. So I know that was a Steven Spielberg movie, but like thinking about Marion in the first Indiana Jones movie, right? She's a strong female character, and like essentially she falls for Indiana Jones and there's no reason for her to do so. He is constantly dismissing her. Like, he doesn't take her seriously. It is not like, I grew up thinking that was like a really cute bantering romance. I'm watching that as an adult. I'm just like, no, this is not okay.
Well, we both just watched it together recently. Exactly. And I hadn't seen it in a while. And we went into it being like, oh, Indiana Jones is great. And then as we were watching it, we were just like, oh no.
Right? And that, like, that kind of echoed in the prequels, where it's just, like, you have these characters who are very compelling on their own, but then they're just, like, they eventually just serve as a plot device for the male characters.
I think the next time that anything substantive happens as pertains to Padme and Anakin is after Palpatine has executed Order 66. So Obi-Wan goes to Padme and tells her, I'm looking for Anakin. What was the last time you saw him? He asks her if she knows where he is now, and she says, no, he wouldn't tell me. Clearly lying. And then he says, Padme, I need your help. He's in grave danger. And Padme replies, from the Sith. And Obi-Wan says, from himself. Padme, Anakin has turned to the dark side.
Yes.
And she responds, you're wrong. How could you even say that? I have seen a security hologram of him killing younglings.
Not Anakin. He couldn't.
He was deceived by a lie. We all were. It appears that the Chancellor is behind everything, including the war. Palpatine is the Sith Lord we've been looking for. After the death of Count Dooku, Anakin became his new apprentice.
And then she says, I don't believe you, right? I can't.
Yes. So IMDb says, turns away in shock, sits down on the couch. I don't believe you. I can't. Obi-Wan, Padme, I must find him. Padme, you're going to kill him, aren't you?
I loved Obi-Wan in this scene. He just like, yeah, can't commit to not killing him.
Yeah, he says he has become a very great threat. Padme turns away and shakes her head. I can't. Obi-Wan, Anakin is the father, isn't he? I'm so sorry.
So my reaction to that at the time was like, in all caps, no kidding. And then where's her support system? And like 20 question marks, because like, where are they? Like, she's all alone.
Then Padme goes to find Anakin.
How does she even know where he is?
Does he tell her?
Oh yeah, he did say. He said he had like one last final mission. It was very important. That was when he went and killed the Trade Federation, because the Palpatine was covering his tracks.
And that, like, and they were on Mustafar. So I guess she did know where he was. But she goes to find him, and Obi-Wan
dashes
onto the ship.
Smart man, that one.
So I guess we can go through some of their dialogue. So he sees that her ship is there. She tells him that she came because she was worried about him, and Obi-Wan told her terrible things. You turned to the dark side, and that you killed younglings. And his response is, Obi-Wan is trying to turn you against me.
I wrote, I would say, wow, he's changed so much, but he has always been that condescending.
Yeah, I can't really argue with that. So Padme tells him he wants to help you, and all she wants is his love. And Anakin responds, love won't save you, Padme. Only my new powers can do that. I won't lose you the way I lost my mother. I'm becoming more powerful than any Jedi has ever dreamed of, and I'm doing it for you, to protect you.
Oh, yeah. Even when turning to the dark side, he puts everything on her.
So, amazingly, at this point, she is still willing to just be like, it's okay, it's fine.
She says he's a good person, right?
Yeah, she says he's a good person, and says, come away with me, help me raise our child, leave everything else behind while we still can.
Yeah.
And then he goes into, don't you see? We don't have to run away anymore. I have brought peace to the Republic. I am more powerful than the Chancellor. I can overthrow him, and together you and I can rule the galaxy, make things the way we want them to be.
I was so, like, at no point in the relationship as portrayed in the prequels did they ever actually agree on the method for rule. He was all in favor of the dictatorship. She said no. Then they have that whole conversation about, like, the Republic and the separatist movement. So I don't know why he thinks that's, like, a compelling thing. So, like, later on in the sequels, you get that dynamic between Kylo and Rey, where Kylo essentially, like, kind of echoes this, like, come with me, you know, we can reshape it. And that at least is compelling, right? Because, like, they've never had these conversations. They've never, like, established it, like, definitively that they don't agree on governance. So, like, it was just, like, why do you think that this is going to sway her? Like, she's principled and she believes in politics, and you've made it clear that you, like, have no regard for her opinion. And yet you think this is, like, the persuasive argument to make.
Right. And she's never indicated, like, you know, I'm just a senator, but I have ambitions to be chancellor, or I want to move up in the ranks, and I have all of these grand plans for what we could do. That has never happened.
Nope. I wrote also, if you had actually paid attention to Padme, you would realize this was never what she wanted. So.
Then she tells him he's changed, which sort of.
I guess.
And then he just continues to be, like, super weird about Obi-Wan. Like, he's so convinced that Obi-Wan is the source of all of his issues, and that Obi-Wan, like, doesn't want him to succeed, and he's the reason the Jedi turned against him. And I feel like it's almost implied that he thinks that something has happened between Padme and Obi-Wan.
Yeah. And initially, I thought that was, like, completely out of the blue, because, like, they're not shown to interact in, like, any meaningful way. But then with the visions, like, his nightmares, he sees Obi-Wan with Padme. And I think that's the source of, like, his paranoia there, is, like, he sees, like, Obi-Wan coaching her through childbirth, and he's like, why is he there? That's the only thing I can think of.
Well, then he explicitly says that he thinks that Padme has brought Obi-Wan there to kill him. And that's when he starts force choking her.
Yeah, Obi-Wan definitely timed that, like, appearance really poorly.
He's just like, oh, hey.
I know, I'm like, at least give her a chance to, like, you know, do her work. And he's just like, da-da-da. And then, like, yeah, prompts the force choking. I'm like, this is not how you, like, de-escalate a situation.
Up until, I think, right before Force Awakens came out, and I was, like, reacquainting myself with the prequels a little bit, I 100% thought that she died in that moment. Like, I was convinced that Anakin directly killed her.
Yeah.
That's not the case, but that's what I thought for, like, 10 years.
I mean, it's not that implausible. Like, I mean, she had to give birth to the baby, so I feel like that's the only reason she survived that.
So I don't know because, what I was, like, thinking, but
I also feel like there was, like, a little bit of, like, holding back. Oh, interestingly, complete side note, but I feel like there's a little bit of, I'll finish my train of thought before moving into this other thing. I feel like there's a little bit of holding back where, like, George Lucas still wanted sympathy for Anakin as a character, which is, like, I mean, that ship sailed Attack of the Clones for me. And so him not directly killing her makes it easier to have sympathy for Darth Vader later, because he didn't actually kill her. He just force-choked her and broke her heart.
Force-choked her into unconsciousness while heavily pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this really does speak to, like, what George Lucas thinks is okay. By the way, did you know he wanted to show Anakin killing children on screen?
I did not know that.
Yes. Yes.
I feel like it works well the way it is. Where, like, actually, that scene is really good. Like,
I was devastated.
The whole scene where, like, he's, like, walking towards the temple with the hood on, and, like, there's this overhead shot of him approaching it. Like, that scene is very well done. in my opinion.
Yeah. He wanted to show it. And I'm just like, why?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Not in exactly. Star Wars.
Yeah.
Not in Star Wars, George Lucas. What are you thinking?
Exactly. Also, I did want to flag something that is not related, which can be cut out, but I feel like I have to mention it now. Later on, they talk about, or before that, when he's talking to Yoda, Obi-Wan is, it was something about thousands of troops storming the temple. And I'm like, thousands? Really? That was thousands? It looked like maybe, I don't know, a couple hundred, possibly. Yeah, apparently there were thousands.
Maybe the limitations of 2005 CGI.
Yeah. And then I wrote, my next thought was like, no wonder George Lucas and Steven Spielberg are friends. They're heavy-handed when it comes to emotions.
Speaking of, obviously, there's the whole duel between Obi-Wan and Anakin, and probably the most graphic scene that there is in Star Wars. And after that's all happened, Obi-Wan takes Padme somewhere to give birth, or she's not to give birth, I guess, just to get her checked out medically. And the droid is just like, hey, we need to do a space C-section because her babies are gonna die, she's gonna die, we need to do this. So she's just like crying nonstop this whole time. It's implied that she is very weak, and there is the infamous line from the medical droid where they're just like, what's wrong with her? And
medically, she's very healthy. For reasons unknown, we are losing her. Like,
yeah. So Luke and Leia are born. She names them.
Can we talk about the parallels in the filmography between Padme giving birth and Anakin undergoing reconstruction?
Yes.
Because I felt like that was just, like, ridiculous. Like, I'm like, these are not comparable.
I don't mind that, actually, because I think it's more so the parallel between Luke and Leia being born and Anakin becoming Darth Vader. And
better.
I think, like, as much as I can say that, like, the prequels aren't my favorite, I will say the scene where he is, I don't know, what would you even describe that as? Like, I guess just the scene where he's being put into the suit.
Yeah.
When
reconstructed.
When they put the helmet on and he breathes for the first time through the helmet, like, it literally gives me chills.
I'm so angry at Anakin. Like, yeah, I guess I was doing the same deep breath of being like, breathe. Like, rah. Darth Vader is a lot easier for me to handle as a character. Yes,
me too. And I also want to say that having read a lot of the Darth Vader comics, those really help me personally in reconciling Anakin, Darth Vader, and connecting the two. And I have appreciated that.
I could appreciate that in theory. I kind of like having them separate in my head, though, because I have such hatred for Anakin, and Darth Vader is okay. So, like, I'm not super motivated to reconcile those two in my head.
I also had some thoughts about his being put into the suit and the implications of that, and the fact that he now has to have this suit to survive. And it basically is like being in a walking prison for the rest of his life.
Yeah. A walking prison while still killing plenty of other people and making other people's lives miserable.
True. But I don't know. Like, I do really like Darth Vader.
Right, I'm just like, wait a minute.
And I think the implications of everything that has happened to Anakin and, like, what it means for him as Darth Vader is interesting. And it's much more interesting to me after that point than it is when he's still Anakin, because, like, it's difficult for me to deal with Anakin and sympathize with him in any way. I don't know. I think there's a lot to unpack there.
My theory is James Earl Jones is the reason. I'm like, you know what? Maybe it's after Hayden Christensen just ceased to exist. And I was like, okay. Like, I can handle you.
So before we move on from Padme giving birth, I did want to bring this up in particular. So I have a daily Star Wars calendar, which I have this year's for 2020, and I also had one for 2019. And I think there have been some repeats in between them, but it's not like every day is a repeat. I have sometimes just been astounded by the things that are in this calendar that probably should be elsewhere, but are just in this daily calendar. So I saved this calendar page from June 18th of this year. And I think there was a similar one from 2019, but I think it might have been slightly different. Same concept. So this one is for the GH7 analysis droid. GH7 analysis droids are hovering blue and silver medical droids trained to diagnose physical ailments. One of these droids works on Polis Massa Station and treats Padme Amidala after she's assaulted by her husband, Anakin Skywalker, who has recently turned to the dark side. Didn't even think about the fact that it says after she was assaulted by her husband.
Yeah, I feel like there's like a lot to unpack in that one sentence.
Yeah. So then it goes on to say, because her ailments are metaphysical or possibly influenced by the will of the Force, the droid is unable to save her. I have a lot of questions about this one sentence in the Star Wars Daily Calendar.
Maybe. I mean, because, like, right, it just kind of evokes Leia later, right? Where she lays down and then she gives her life to, implied to Kylo Ren. Like, maybe that is the deal with Padme, is, like, she could feel, the reason she's crying is not so much that she's giving birth, because she feels Anakin in so much pain, and she gives her life to Anakin.
So I interpreted that a totally different way.
Oh.
Which was that her life force is being drained, yes, but I interpreted it as Palpatine is aware that she's still alive, and he's trying to keep Anakin alive, and that somehow Padme's life force was taken to create Darth Vader.
Interesting. Right, because, I mean, it's essentially the same, but the different motives, right? Is her force life taken from her? Or force life? Life force taken from
force
her?
Life.
Force life. The well-known force life. Is Palpatine the one orchestrating that? Or is that something that Padme did for Anakin as, like, one last sacrifice?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we don't know. I feel like it could be either. But I thought it was very interesting that this calendar page insinuated that she didn't just lose the will to live, that it was somehow influenced by the Force. And that made much more sense to me.
It does. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Now, why would it be the will of the Force for her to die?
Because not sure. She's not in the original trilogy. Oh no, plot hole. The will of the Force. I feel like those two options sound way more compelling than just the Force had, like, this idea to be like, Padme, no, you must die.
Because you would think the Force does not want Darth Vader to rise to power.
Yeah, exactly. Assuming the
Force. And it doesn't matter. Like, you could say, like, the Force wants Luke and Leia to be born, but that doesn't mean that Padme has to die.
No, it does not. And honestly, like, doesn't the Force really want balance, which is then just violated consistently?
But what does balance mean? Still unclear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, is, this is a question I had, is the prophecy mentioned again, like, in the original trilogy? Is the prophecy mentioned in the original trilogy? No. Like, it's just, like, it seems so unnecessary. And it's still just, like, at ultimately at the end of Rise of Skywalker, again, what is balance? And it doesn't seem to be balanced.
Yeah.
I should note that throughout this, Padme's birth at the end, where is Sabe? Where is she? Where is Sabe? That is my question. E.K. Johnston.
I really want to read the rest of the current Darth Vader comic because I want to know if it goes into any of this, where Sabe was. I want to see her interact with Vader because I feel like it's going to be interesting. And also, dude, so
I would love Sabe to kill Darth Vader, even though that's like canonically impossible.
No, not gonna like.
Man, that would be a showdown for the ages.
Get your hopes up for that. They also just did. We're recording this before it's being released, so it's currently during the time that San Diego Comic-Con would normally be happening, and they're doing a whole Comic-Con at home, and today was the Star Wars, Lucasfilm, Disney book panel, and there's a lot of cool stuff coming out, but they had the writer for the current Darth Vader comic on the panel, and he said that he was super excited about what they were doing in the Darth Vader comic and that there were a lot of things that were going to relate to or have implications for episode 9, Rise of Skywalker. So I'm very intrigued.
Yes. I'm like looking at the programming. I'm so like instantly distracted. I'm like, yes, I want to look at some of this stuff. Okay.
Explicitly thank E.K. Johnston for what she had done with Sabe. And I was like, yes, well deserved.
Agreed. I would totally, E.K. Johnston, if you do eventually listen to this, I would definitely read anything else you wrote, including the prequel to Queen Shadow, but also you should get started on a sequel because that would be amazing.
All right. So. So then
she will never listen to this.
Really, I mean, I would love it if E.K. Johnston listened to this. I don't know if that will ever happen, but I would love it if E.K. Johnston could know just how much we appreciate her.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially watching the prequels again. Like, oh my gosh. I mean, she basically, you've talked about like the prequels having good ideas and like being poor in execution, and I've had conversations elsewhere about that same topic, and I never really saw it, but then I read Queen's Shadow, I'm like, oh, okay, like it could have been a lot better. It's not just horrible on its face and throughout. And
well, I mean, I even think if George Lucas really wanted it to be that Anakin had this tragic romance that caused him to turn to the dark side because he was so afraid of losing this woman. Like, that idea is fine. Like,
yep,
it could have worked.
There was no reason. Again, getting back to, like, the beginning of this episode, is like, he had very, I mean, there, as I said, there were things that had to be achieved. Anakin had to become Darth Vader. You know, Obi-Wan had to go into exile. Mace Windu, obviously, is dead. But within that, like, the
Palpatine had to become the Emperor.
Yes, exactly. Padme wasn't in the original trilogy, so something had to happen to her. But, like, there was
Leia
so much
had to be born, so obviously he had to be with someone.
Yeah. So, like, there was so much flexibility within those very narrow limitations. And, like, the fact that this is what he came up with is still, it's just so deficient. Like, it basically set up this like very problematic relationship as like the reason that Darth Vader exists, and I just don't buy it. Like,
I don't think it was just that. I think that was a major driving factor. I think him losing his mom was a huge factor.
That's true.
I think also just the fact that he felt like he needed to have control was a factor. And I mean, maybe having been a slave and then going into the Jedi Order and having people tell him you must do this. You can't do this. This is the way things are going to be. Like, his whole speech about how, I know I shouldn't want more, but I do. Like, at some point, he just wanted to be the person that had all the power.
Yeah.
And that definitely plays into it as well.
That's true. Yeah. I just feel like if you wanted this to be, like, a defining, memorable romance, like, you missed the mark entirely. Yeah. Like,
yeah, I definitely agree.
Here's the target, and you're, like, out there, like, shooting things into the forest, killing innocent deer. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that was meant to be the human aspect of all of it, in addition to his mom. Like, it happened to his mom, and he just couldn't accept that happening to his mom, and he certainly couldn't accept it happening to the other person that he loved that much. But just the way that his love for Padme is portrayed is problematic.
Yes. Yep. I mean, honestly, like, going back to what I was, like, originally saying, like, it is actually pretty believable that he becomes Darth Vader because of this, but, like, I still don't understand, like, Padme's role in it.
No.
Like, he was obsessive. He continued being obsessed with her. He never treated her as a person, and then she died. Yeah. Okay, man, you're Darth Vader now. But for her, it just sells her entirely short.
Yeah, and I guess I don't think we can, like, totally get into all of it right now, but you brought up the term fridge. So I forget what the specific origin of that term was, but basically, since we referenced it, it's when a female character dies for the sake of advancing a male character's development.
It was a comic where literally the man's, like, significant other was, like, chopped up and put him in a fridge. No, maybe not chopped up. Maybe I'm adding the chopped up part. But yes, he found her body in the refrigerator, which basically served as his motivation to, like, become a hero. Deadpool 2, spoilers, is also accused of this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you need your character to be tormented and, like, right. You know, continue to, like, you can't be happy and, like, be fighting crime, so you need to have something terrible happen to you, like Bruce Wayne.
For yeah, instance. That's exactly what I was thinking of, and I was like, I can't really say anything because I, for the most part, don't really care about superheroes that much other than Batman, and, like, the reason that I like Batman is because he's just constantly tormented, so.
Yep.
Like, literally, when The Dark Knight Rises came out, I watched that movie and I was like, what is this? He's not Batman anymore? He's happy? Like, no. No, thank you.
Oh, man. I feel like that just sells, like, everyone short, right? Like, you can't... I mean, just because you're happy doesn't mean that you're not still willing to risk your life for, like... a greater good, for the good of Gotham.
No, but I mean, like, that's Batman's whole thing.
Tormented thing going on. But wouldn't it be nice if he was just in a stable relationship and still fought crime? I'd like that.
I can understand why you would like that, but I just don't think... If Batman were a real person, sure.
Batman is, yeah, he's at the mercy of his, like, people who write about him, and, like, there is a lot of investment in him continuing to be tormented, which means he probably has more fridging incidences in his future.
So, the last thing I want to talk about, Padme has died at this point, I guess, really, like, right around this point, is when Anakin, now as Darth Vader, rises up and Palpatine is, like, checking to make sure he's okay, I guess. And then he asks Palpatine, where's Padme? Is she safe? Is she all right? And Palpatine responds, it seems in your anger you killed her. And then Darth Vader says, I couldn't have. She was alive. I felt it. Which she was. And again, this is also part of the reason that I think Palpatine had something to do with her dying. And then this is like why I like Revenge of the Sith is like all this stuff. And you probably will disagree with me, but like he just goes crazy and essentially crushes everything around him with the Force and just like breaks the manacles that are keeping him strapped to the table. Mm-hmm. And then this is the much reviled no. Which isn't great, but the part before it I like.
So I had a different reaction. I do appreciate like him throwing a temper tantrum, having been that kid. Okay, that's not strictly true. I'm doing myself a disservice. I have a temper, and I was known on occasion to slam some doors, but I didn't, like, destroy things. Like, I wasn't going around as a young Darth Vader. Anyways, so I appreciated that. That's fine. My reaction was disbelief that, like, Anakin still just took Palpatine's words at face value, despite the fact that he had now realized like Palpatine had been hiding as the Sith Lord for multiple years, very clearly lying to the Jedi Council's face, and yet he still is just like, oh my god, I killed her. And I wrote, yes, let's trust the man who lies all the time as my response to that scene, because it's just, yeah, I mean, I have read things where it's just like the level of control that Palpatine had over Anakin.
Yeah.
Is
I
like,
mean, he just completely manipulates him.
Yeah.
There's that whole conversation after, I think it's after Dooku dies. Yeah, because he basically manipulates Anakin into killing Dooku. And then he's like, what have I done? And Dooku is just like, well, become my apprentice and we can save your wife. And he's just like, yes, yes, I'll do anything you ask of me. And then Palpatine says, I'm sure that together we can figure out the secret. And Anakin is just like, what? But that doesn't change his mind. He's just like, okay, well, this is the only way that I can possibly save Padme. And then, like, essentially from that moment on, well, yeah, and then by doing so, he actually causes her death. But, like, then from that moment on, he's just obedient to Palpatine until Return of the Jedi, when Luke makes him have a change of heart.
Yeah.
In the comic, there's a lot about how Darth Vader is resentful of Palpatine, and like Palpatine just makes him do all of these things that Palpatine doesn't want to do and just like torments him on purpose.
Yeah.
And he's not happy about it.
Isn't that just Anakin, like, from the get-go? It doesn't matter who his master is, he's gonna be resentful and feel like he deserves better.
True.
I should not be so judgy, I think, is the takeaway message here. Like, just because Anakin seems to be a whiny, complaining, not at all romantically, like, attractive person, doesn't mean he doesn't deserve our sympathy.
Yeah, I mean, I have some sympathy for him as Darth Vader. I don't have sympathy for him as Anakin.
No, because, like, I mean, as I immediately, like, yeah, that was me trying to, like, convince myself. Maybe depending on the level of Palpatine's control, I could have some sympathy for him as Anakin, and maybe watching Clone Wars when he's now portrayed by Hayden Christensen, smirking smugly whenever, like, Padme tries to assert her agency.
I have not read these particular comics, but I know there is a comic that is about Anakin trying to resurrect Padme. So I am interested to read that.
He can't even leave her alone in death. Like, just let the poor woman go. Like, seriously. My last thought, of course expected, is like the last thing I wrote here is, where is Sabe?
Well, Unclear Warsabe is, she's at her funeral because that was mentioned in Queen's Shadow. So, I mean, I don't know where she was leading up to that point or where she was after the funeral up until like 20 years later.
Yeah.
But she's back now. Now being in the original trilogy timeline.
Well, someone will hopefully resolve that burning question I have. And maybe in the next episode, I won't feel the need to, like, repeat myself quite so many times. Hearts and lungs, where is Sabe?
Well, that is it for today's show. Our intro and outro music is by Lobo Loco, and our segment break music is by Poddington Bear. You can find us on Twitter at SWSleepover. You can also follow my personal handle, which is at Stelle Lontane. It's STELLELONTANE. And then we are also on Instagram at Star Wars Sleepover. If you have somehow been impressed with our last three episodes and want to consider rating and reviewing us on iTunes or wherever you listen, that would really help us to get the word out about our podcast, and we really appreciate it. We will be back next week with a discussion of L337 and Lando, of course. Thanks for listening.
And may the Force be with you.